Qatar Saudi Grand Prix is underway, and it's a good launch off the line for both Red Bulls. Charles Leclerc is under threat now for second place. Verstappen leads. Perez will get his nose ahead. Perez will get second place. Charles Leclerc's got the grippy line. Has he got the room to fight back? As they all make their way through the first corners of the first lap, it's Verstappen, but Charles Leclerc fights back into second position. He went aggressive, and he maintains P2. That's Behrmann off the road as he begins life in Formula 1, slightly on the defensive. It's Verstappen, Leclerc, Perez, Alonso, Piastri and Norris, the top six.
Well managed from Leclerc in those opening corners. Perez looked like he had got the job done, but Leclerc swept back around the outside of turn two, which he can do because it gives him the inside for four, and he made it stick. The rest of it looks fairly unchanged further back, but I'm pretty sure Lando Norris jumped the start.
Perez had a great opportunity here to take second place, David.
He did indeed, and you'd think he did all the hard work, but just when it came to sort of closing that space down, Charles Leclerc wasn't intimidated, and this is when it comes down to knowing your competitors. If that was Max Verstappen alongside Charles Leclerc, Max would have just run the car a little bit wider, making it absolutely clear that there was no space for Charles.
Lando Norris at the start, no further action. Behrmann is starting his Formula 1 career on the front foot, but he's got to remember to stay to the right side of the line as around the outside goes Oscar Piastri on Fernando Alonso to take fourth place, and they're fighting all the way by as Behrmann had to hobble all over the curb to keep his front wing. Here we go with Perez. This is the battle for second place. He's diving to the inside, and Sergio Perez finds his way by with the first opportunity that he had in the Grand Prix. Looked like he was going to take second place on lap number one. Lap number four, he's got 2.1 seconds between him and his teammate in the lead of the race. This is into turn 22. Look at how
crash
off the road and into the wall. A heavy one at turn 23. Lance Stroll into the barriers and out of the race.
Get the wall.
Okay, can you bring it back, Lance?
Oh, the wall.
I copy that.
Easy to criticize, difficult to do, but he isn't a rookie.
Yeah.
Everyone is coming into the pits. This is going to be so busy. They're going to stick on a hard set of tyres and maybe try and go to the end from here. Really long-ranging one-stopper.
Crucially, gets out before the Ferrari, and in this situation, there'll be no question of unsafe release.
Yeah, and Perez flung into the path of Fernando Alonso as it is incredibly frantic stuff down there in the pit lane.
Well, I've had a crash with a rebel. So close.
Sergio Perez gets a 5-second penalty for an unsafe release. Here we go again. It is very tight between Oscar Piastri and Charles Leclerc for fourth. Lando Norris leads. Then it's Max Verstappen. And that is very tight as Charles Leclerc stays ahead and fends off the Australian driver. Alonso trying to profit from it in the green Aston Martin. Has he got momentum to try and retake the place that he lost from Piastri earlier in the race? The answer's no. And they're close, but there's no change for position. Side by side, Albon goes. That is a tap. That is damage. And Ocon profited.
What is he doing?
Kevin Magnussen has been given a 10-second time penalty.
This is the Behrmann move. Little dummy shimmy to the inside. Go on, then.
I like that. I like that expression, the Behrmann move.
Max Verstappen in the unusual position of being in second place. Not for long. Max Verstappen moves past and takes the lead from Lando Norris. He's back in the lead of the race, and he's not the only Red Bull on the move. Perez improves to third. Charles Leclerc trying to go past Lewis Hamilton, outside line to the inside line. Going to be brave to make that work. Is there room? There is. And that's a great angle to show you that getting to the apex first has worked for the lead Ferrari driver in the race. He's 1.7 seconds away from Sergio Perez. He's going to have a good opportunity now to build up through the gears to try and make his way by. The Haas is in the way, but only for the moment. That's the pass he's been looking for, and the man on debut in Formula 1 is up to ninth. Kevin Magnussen has been given a 10-second time penalty for leaving the track and gaining an advantage.
Oh, you are kidding me, aren't you? 10 seconds for that?
That's harsh.
And the chance of a safety car with these four brawling in the way that they are, well, it goes up when they go side by side. Sonoda's been looking for that pass lap after lap. Magnussen doesn't want to give it up. Brilliant racing from the pair of them. Magnussen knows that he's not going to score a point in the race. That is defiance, and it's cost Yuki Tsunoda, because Esteban Ocon finally gives Alpine something to smile about.
So this drive from Magnussen is going to earn Haas a point, because Hülkenberg, at the end of this lap, should have a pit stop window to come in and clear his teammate.
Whoa, that's a send and a half for Alexander Albon. Patience ran out at turn number one. It's only 14th, but it looked great on board. Yuki Tsunoda will not want to go backwards. The driver who started in ninth position on the grid is passed again. As Hülkenberg comes into the pits, we talked of that pit window a few moments ago, and Hülkenberg is going to blend out onto the racetrack, and Haas might have engineered a chance to get Hülkenberg into the points. We've had plenty of chapters of this battle time and time again. This is the best run for Oscar Piastri through the entire race, and Hamilton's defence comes to an end, or does it? Piastri locks up, takes the place, won't be able to overtake like that. He had the momentum, he had the overspeed, but he couldn't slow down the McLaren, and still they battle over fifth place.
Behrmann, if he keeps this consistency, he's actually just done his best lap of the race. He's only a tenth and a half slower than Norris. Absolutely cracking drive this from Ollie Behrmann.
And Norris struggling a bit with tyres there. He's fighting with Hamilton as well. We can do it.
Great encouragement for the British driver, 18 years of age, looking for points in debut in Formula One. This was Daniel Ricciardo running in 16th place. Around he goes.
Clouting an apex curve, rear tyres that were probably on the limit already.
Max Verstappen is going to win the opening two Grand Prix of the year. A ninth consecutive win. Max Verstappen, eat, sleep, win, repeat. Verstappen takes the Saudi Arabian Grand Prix to lead home a Red Bull 1-2. An outstanding result for the team. Once again, the Mexican fans celebrating in the grandstand. Verstappen wins the Saudi Arabian Grand Prix with another drive of distinction. As Charles Leclerc comes home for his first podium finish of the season. And look at this moment for the 18-year-old from Chelmsford. Points on debut for Oliver Behrmann. Ferrari's youngest ever Formula One driver is a point scorer at the first attempt.
This is the Outlap F1 podcast featuring America's own John, James, Andy, and Deanna. Your one-stop shop for Formula One news, insights, race previews, and reviews. Join us on the Outlap.
What's up, Outlap F1 Nation? This is season six. This is episode number six of the Outlap F1 podcast. It's our 2024 Saudi Arabian Grand Prix race review show. You've got Andy, and I'm along with Deanna, making her debut for 2024. It is good to see you, my friend. How are things been, and how's it going?
Things are great. Happy to be back for a little bit more exciting race this week.
Yes, after Bahrain, I think we were all fingers crossed, like, dear Lord, let it not be quite that bad. It was better. It was definitely better. It's a step in the right direction. If we can kind of evolve from here, it's definitely a lot more palatable. I'll take what we got today, and we'll get into all that in just a little bit. As always, you can find our show on Twitter, X, whatever the heck that platform is still called these days, Instagram, which we have activated recently, Discord, Reddit, and of course, YouTube at Outlap F1 Podcast is the handle. If you like what you're seeing and you want to help support the show a little bit, you can click the like and subscribe button on YouTube. If you're on your favorite podcasting app, note also, we're still trying to promote our new Apple Podcast link. So we will put that out wherever on our social media where we continue to do that. You can just go to our link tree. Best place is on any of our bios. We post our link tree. We've got the new Apple Podcast link there. And hopefully it should just be a quick little follow and you're all set up like you were before. And a 5-star review would also help out as well. You can email the show, chatnow@outlapf1.com. We'll take you there. The website, we're still working on it, but we have it in pieces. We're just trying to put it back together and trying to get it back up. But we have made some progress on that, so hopefully more to come very soon. www.outlapf1.com will take you there eventually. Outlap F1 Nation, thank you as always to our continued monetary supporters, including Dean Warwick, Yuri Dolchester, Paul Weaver, Quentin Warden, Kevin Kelly, Regan Stanzik, Timothy Brown, and of course, Jonathan Scott. You can see, if you'd like to become a member of the hashtag Outlap F1 Nation, you can see our anchor page, $1, $5, all goes into purchasing new equipment for the show, upgrading the equipment we already have, and fixing these lovely little tech issues that seem to pop up on the internet now these days. So we would be most appreciative if you'd like to do that. Final note before we hop into things proper, our code OUTLAP at the good folks at Manscaped still works. You can get 20% off and free shipping by using the code OUTLAP, OUTLAP, all one word, at checkout. All right, so we will start with our headline of the day. D, what's your thought? What was your big thought of the Saudi Arabian version of F1 2024?
I think Ollie Berman, welcome to F1. So I think I may have stole a bit of yours there, Andy, so sorry about that. But
it's all right.
That was just the big thing of the whole weekend. I mean, I hope Carlos Sainz gets better soon. I don't know why he was walking around like that day after surgery, but okay. But yeah, just seeing a young driver like that get thrown into the car after his first putting it on pole in F2 in his second race. And I think it was a pretty huge weekend for him. And just one of those fun stories. And it added a little bit more excitement to the weekend for sure.
Yeah, definitely. Carlos Sainz coming down with appendicitis, which he thought was just food poisoning on Wednesday during media day. So he took the day off, did run the free practices 1 and 2 on Thursday, found himself in a much worse state of bother, according to him, and then checked himself into a hospital where they discovered his appendix was not doing very well and needed to be rectified. And they went ahead and did that. The good news is apparently it was the microsurgery technique that they tend to use, which means that they let you go the next day because he was back in the paddock cheering on his compatriot, Oliver Berman, who did, you know, basically, hey, kid, want to drive an F1 car? Had that conversation given to him. And we'll get into all of his trials and tribulations of a very truncated weekend. My headline of the day is, for all the mess off the track, my God, is that Red Bull absolutely ridiculous on it. And yeah, hello, Ollie Berman. We see you. All right. So we will rewind back to Friday. And we will get into the qualifying recap here. All right. Not being able to set a time due to a crash in free practice 3. They managed to get him out with about a minute left on the clock, but he was unable to set a time. That was the kick Sauber of Zhao Guanyu, who does not get classified. P19 was Logan Sargeant. P18 was Pierre Gasly. P17 was Esteban Ocon. P16 was Valtteri Bottas. Advancing through the Q2 in P15 was Nico Hülkenberg. However, he did not set a time because he had an engine failure in Q2. P14, Daniel Ricciardo. P13, Kevin Magnussen. P12, Alex Albon. And P11, just missing out on the Q3 after having only 60 minutes in the car, Oliver Bearman in the Ferrari. So well done, young man. The top 10 from 10 to 1 in P10 was Lance Stroll. P9, Yuki Tsunoda, a good showing for the Racing Bull there. P8, Lewis Hamilton. P7, George Russell. P6 was Lando Norris in the McLaren. P5 was his teammate Oscar Piastri in the other McLaren. P4 was Fernando Alonso. Aston Martin Sigalak, pace looking very strong. P3, Sergio Checo Perez. P2 was Charles Leclerc. And in P1, Thanos the Inevitable, Max Verstappen in the Red Bull, 127.472. D, big thoughts on the qualifying?
I mean, the big one is Ollie Bearman. I think he was 0.03 off of Q3 behind Lewis Hamilton. So for your first go, and especially on this track, for this track to be the one you get thrown into, it was pretty crazy. And yeah, just props to him.
Yeah, I thought his coming, you know, I like what Ferrari did. Not actually putting him on a set of soft tires in FP3. They tried to get him as comfortable as he could with as many different tire compounds as they could, weren't necessarily the soft, so that when he had the soft, he had plenty of sets. He could do multiple runs, which enabled him to, you know, and like I said, he was on pace pretty early. Now, we know the Ferrari is probably on par, the second fastest car generally. But it's one thing to have a great car. It's another thing to actually try to wheel that thing around this track. And I think he was going something like 8 or 9, 10 seconds faster than his F2 pole time was. So, I mean, just the difference in grip and the difference in just trying to get your arms around that machine, never mind what it was doing to his neck, never mind what it was doing to all the rest of him. It was pretty much probably too young and a little bit kind of dumb to know exactly what was going on with him. So he just kind of did what it came natural to him. So yeah, great, great going. To put that car as far up as he did. We'll definitely talk about him in the race. You know, big notes in qualifying. We are kind of seeing kind of that decanting of kind of what the running order sort of is. It definitely looks like the Aston Martin over one lap is definitely stronger than it is in race pace. We know the Red Bulls are good. We know the Ferraris are pretty strong. The McLarens and the Mercedes and the Astons, that's the blob. It's so tight between those three. Or what we were talking about in Bahrain was it was going to be very circuit specific, favored a little bit more McLaren, but Fernando Alonso still doing Alonso things. I thought was actually very impressive over one lap for him.
The one thing that did make me sad, though, is the only thing that was close last year and in Bahrain was the qualifying, and Max Win just killed everybody by 0.3, and it didn't ever look like that was going to be contended. So anyway, just the joys of Max being Max.
Like, it was interesting just looking kind of at the timings. A lot of the cars could kind of stay with the Red Bull in Sector 1 and Sector 2, but it was that third sector that was just, they were just so much better. And I think it's just overall straight line speed and overall kindness to the tire where it just doesn't degrade over the course of the lap like it was for a lot of other guys. So, yeah, I mean, like I said, the Red Bull, that thing, absolutely ridiculous. Okay, so we will now transition to Saturday afternoon. Dee, what do you think of the schedule, just out of curiosity?
You know what? I mean, this is kind of nice, but we're recording on a Saturday night, and I don't have to worry about going to work tomorrow morning. but it is, I don't know, like Sundays are race days, so it's a bit funky. But then tomorrow I don't have to worry about it overlapping with IndyCar, so I guess that was a positive. I don't know. I don't hate it, but it's just not normal.
Yeah. I mean, it does kind of take away from the buildup over the course of a weekend. And, you know, then all of a sudden, well, you know, it's your Saturday afternoon and it's already done. Yeah. Like there's no more following it.
I also retract what I said because then way more sessions are in the middle of my work day that I can't watch. So
yeah,
that's also annoying. So yeah, maybe not.
Thursday was
a
challenge.
I can get away with it working from home on a Friday, but Thursday it's a little tougher. Sitting at the office trying to watch a practice session. It's not normally going to fly, so.
No, and then I got pulled into like three different meetings on Thursday, and by the time I looked up, I went, well, that bird has sailed.
Yeah.
I might as well just not go on anything until I get home. And then I tried to catch up there as best I could.
Yeah. I got meetings put on my calendar for 12 to 1 on Friday, which is exactly the qualifying window, so we had to revisit that.
Yeah, it's like there's a way to do it, but it's like, you know, I honestly wish like it would be like traditional like European times where it's like 7-8 o'clock in the morning, because then I could watch it and then go do my thing.
Yeah,
but alas, not quite. But the good news is I think this is the last Saturday weekend for at least the races.
I don't know if you've heard it, but this was the first time I heard the explanation for it, was that they pushed it to get in before Ramadan, and then they, in the regulations, has to be a week after, so that's why it was the two. Anyway, that was the first time today that I heard an explanation, and I was like, oh, why wasn't this communicated better? But anyway.
I think we touched on it. We had a question about it on our last review, so I think we actually talked about it during that, so. All right, so we will transition into the race itself, and we'll start with the back markers, and yow, more pain if you're an Alpine fan. Poor Pierre Gasly could not even get off the line, really. Complaints of a gearbox problem, it would not rev, and he completed one lap and then brought it into the pits, and that was all she wrote for him. The one retirement during the race was the Aston Martin of Lance Stroll, who clipped the wall and then ended up going into the opposite wall, as that's what happens on this track. He did not finish, and he brought out the one and only safety car on the day. P18 was Zhao Guanyu. P17 was Valtteri Bottas. P16, victim of a late spin, Daniel Ricciardo. P15 was Logan Sargeant. P14 was Yuki Tsunoda. And P13, I guess this is progress, Esteban Ocon and the other Alpine did at least have some people behind him today. So, looks like this is kind of a train of pain a lot of different ways. Dee, thoughts on the back markers?
I don't know where I was about to go with that, but Ocon, at least it does look better. At least Alpine look in the mix with this kind of back group. So that, other than Gasly not being able to start, is now 21st of the championship. Sorry to you. in that Logan Sargeant area. I think kind of the biggest of note back here, Ricciardo, I mean, it's only been two races, has not looked competitive against Tsunoda, really. Like, I don't think there's, at this rate, much of a chance that he takes over that Red Bull seat, especially because Perez is doing, I think it's vastly because that car is so far ahead of everything, but he's done everything he needs to do. And so I sadly think this is probably the, if we continue down this path, it's not looking so hot. And I just don't understand. He just had so many issues and just was never anywhere close. So it's not looking great.
Yeah. I mean, what did I say? I would say over the two rounds, I think I've said before that the first five races of this year were critical for Sergio Perez and also critical for Daniel Ricciardo. Perez is passing the test. I mean, we're two rounds in, and there's been hardly anything that you can really say other than maybe a tad bit of bad qualifying form in the first race that he more than made up for in the race itself in Bahrain. Here, you know, qualifying P3, you know, we'll talk about where he finished in a little bit, but yeah, I would say he is passing the test and telling everybody, this is my seat and nobody's going to take it from me unless I give you permission. So, and if you're evaluating him, how else do you see it? So the Ricciardo thing is, I think more was expected given their form in testing. Mm-hmm. He's definitely not, that car is definitely not as curated as we all thought it was going to be. It's definitely not an RB19 with different paint on it. Because if it was, it would, or even if it is, it's not a curated RB19 or an upgraded RB19. It's the same one, and they're not necessarily able to really move forward. You know, I mean, it was some interesting fights in the back, that was for sure. There was a good gaggle of four or five cars that, you know, was probably a very interesting thing to watch. Didn't get a whole lot of TV time, unfortunately. But you know, when your most compelling battle is for P15, that's a tough ask. But you know. Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I mean, it's going to be interesting to see kind of how that team kind of can, if they can move forward, because I think on qualifying pace, they can tickle the top 10. They just haven't been able to do it so far, other than Tsunoda today. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, we will leave the tail of pain out there with the back markers, and we'll move into the midfield, where there were some very interesting battles, I thought, on tap throughout the course of the race. P12... Kevin Magnussen in the Ferrari, probably doing some ultimate teamwork today for Haas. We'll talk about them. P11, Alex Albon in the Williams, just missing out on the points, but a big point for Haas and Nico Hülkenberg, who takes the unfortunate qualifying mishap of the engine dying and turns it into a P10 with some awesome teammate work and a sacrificial lamb in Kevin Magnussen. Mm-hmm. But Haas gets a point. P9 was Lewis Hamilton. P8 was Lando Norris. P7 was Ollie Bearman. There he is. P7 on debut for Ferrari. Well done, young man, yet again. P6 was George Russell. P5, Fernando Alonso. P4 was Oscar Piastri in the other McLaren, saying that he got the most out of what he thought today would bring. So, Dee, big thoughts in the midfield. We'll let you start.
Yeah, I think starting with Haas and K-Mag, I think fun to see them play the team game. It gave us a lot of excitement, I think, and piled those guys all on top of each other. It gave Haas a point. And I think right now, with as dire as it looked at the end of, or at testing, they kind of look like they might be at the front of this group. Granted, this is a track that isn't super high tire deg and they tend to eat through tires, so maybe that was part of it, but it seems like a vast improvement, especially with all of the chaos. We kind of thought that they weren't going to score a point and it might be chaos, but yeah, that was really great. We'll talk about him momentarily, but I think for all K-Mac did, I would assume after today that his seat may be going to someone quite a bit younger.
That's definitely a distinct possibility, given who their reserve is and given the form. I guess let's get into it. Let's talk about Oliver Bearman, the dude of the day. You know, we kind of talked about it in qualifying. He was basically conscripted. Why? Because he was there. If you're Robert Schwartzman, you have to be kind of kicking yourself that it was kind of a scheduling snafu. And of course, now this is when the opportunity comes up and he doesn't get to take it. So Ollie Bearman, who was there because he's a Ferrari Academy driver, was going to be competing in F2. Carlos Sainz comes down with appendicitis. There's no chance to get anybody else in to fill that seat. So the only Academy driver they had was Mr. Bearman, and they put a 38 on that car and literally took a ladder and pasted on while Sky was doing the qualifying buildup show, by the way. Talk about timing. Oliver Bearman over Carlos Sainz's face. So you have to kind of feel for Sainz there a little bit. But, you know, he gets in the car, he puts it, almost makes Q3, and then in the race just was consistent and consistently good. No mistakes, no big strategy errors from Ferrari on that. He goes from P11 to P7 and holds off the two charging Mercedes-powered cars in both Lando Norris and Lewis Hamilton at the end on 40-lap-old hard tires. So, I mean, he looked like a veteran. There was nothing about the driving style. I didn't see any big lockups. I didn't see anything that would indicate that he was nervous or anything. He was just giving constant simple feedback. He is the Haas reserve and will probably then start to put some pressure on Kevin Magnussen for that seat at the end of the season.
Yeah, and I rarely do this, but I will give very big props to Ferrari for the way that they executed this weekend with him. I think you mentioned it earlier, the way that they went about practice and the way that they went about qualifying, and they gave him the tires and everything that he needed to be able to do that. For them to not kind of go to a more veteran driver on the grid, but to just be like, okay, kid, here you go. Like, I think it was really awesome. And they were kind of talking him through the race, which maybe showed that they can have a like normal conversation about the race on the radio. This is not completely foreign. Like, maybe it will get better. Who knows? Probably not. But I think so. Props to Ferrari. But I mean, it's just incredible. I guess that's kind of the bravery you get when you're 18 years old. And he just... it was incredible to watch. You would never know that was his first race. Yeah. So it was, and that he really had only been in the car for 36 hours before that and not had much time with it. So yeah, I think it's pretty incredible stuff. And hopefully see him in Haas next year.
Yeah, I mean, I think he's slated to do 6 FP1 sessions between now and the end of the season. So they're definitely taking his talent very seriously in one the Ferrari Academy. The only negative of all of this is his F2 campaign gets kind of sort of temporarily screwed because he's dead last in the F2 standings now because he races for Prima. Prima did not have a good Bahrain weekend at all. He comes out. He was going to score a couple points for the pole. Those had to get forfeited. So he basically...
Crazy.
Yes. Anyway. It's kind of a... It's kind of like he was never there in the F2 standings, even though he very much was there. He's 10th in the F1 driver standings, and he's dead last in the F2 standings, where he will go back and race and hopefully start to continue to show the amazing form he did here.
But also just shout out to F2. That is a really great grid that they have this year. And a whole lot more racing going on over there. So,
And an interesting sound with that new rear wing.
Yes.
It sounds definitely
like a little spaceship.
Yes. It has its own distinctive thing. Like, you're going to hear that, and you're going to instantly know that that's an F2 car. You're going to hear that before it's an F3 car. You're going to hear it before it's an F1 car. I don't know if that was intended or not, but it's definitely very interesting. And those cars, you know, that's how the ground effect thing is supposed to work, where, like, hey, you can get up right behind the other guy and, you know, watch a move and a counter move, and DRS is here and all that other good stuff. So, yeah, I mean, this F2 grid feels very, very stacked between Ollie Bearman, who will come through in the championship standings beyond just these first couple rounds, Kimi Antonelli, who Mercedes are watching like a hawk, and so is the rest of the grid, and, you know, a number of others. Gabriel Bortoleto, the F3 champion, moving up this year. F2 looks like the place to be to watch where the next ones are coming from. And it looks like there's a pretty good crop going on. So I will be watching for sure.
And imagine if we had an extra team to put more of these drivers in, but oh well.
Concepts. you're putting together a great concept that almost came to fruition, but sadly it didn't. Rant for another day. I've already done that rant. I don't want to start shaking.
Oh, sure, many times. Like, yes. Night. Yeah.
But anyway, we'll leave that there. We talked about Hülkenberg, kind of surprising form. And I know we're only a couple rounds in, and I'm not suggesting that it's anything other than it's just the first couple races, but interesting that Lewis Hamilton is not getting more to grips with a car that he said he really liked coming out of the test. George Russell, solid P6 today. And you can also kind of say the same thing about Lando. Oscar Piastri definitely outshined him this entire weekend. Lando seemed just a little bit off. You couldn't really tell really what it was. The track definitely suited the McLaren car better. There were certainly certain parts of the track that the McLaren car was very good. It got pointed out several times in the broadcast. Especially, you know, some good defending by Lando at the end while also trying to attack. But, I mean, the big thing was the safety car screwed, I think, both of them over because both of their teams, McLaren and Mercedes, elected not to do a double stack where some other teams did. Did you think that it was worth just taking the pain and trying to do the double stack there?
Yeah, no. Well, I think it was what they did was in the moment, the right thing to do. They're both kind of the second cars in both of their teams at that point. And it was just, there is a very high probability of a safety car at this track. I think I was kind of waiting for another one when you had like Tsunoda and Ocon all on top of each other. Like I was like, maybe this is, and Sargeant, they're all in there. So I think they had a good shot at it. And then that really could have transformed the race. So I think it was worth trying. But yeah, I mean, I think the only thing that would have been different is they both might have been ahead of Ollie Bearman, but I don't think it would have made that huge of a difference in their day.
Yeah. I mean, I figured that just the way that it played out, it probably cost them each, I think, two spots. You know, maybe the Russell position for one of them is maybe in the cards, but I think Russell was 3 or 4 seconds up the road. So, and Lando's when he did stop, it was a slow stop. I think it was 4.1 seconds, which is not great by F1 standards. So maybe that has something to do with it. I don't know, but you know, both of these guys who were kind of thought, I think they were going to be in contention for winning races are probably coming to terms with, well, we have to kind of plug away in the midfield for now, kind of realization where, like, Oscar Piastri, he's thrilled to be up there because he started out in the back so bad last year. So, you know, but anyway, it's just something that I've noticed in the first couple of races. I'm not suggesting it's a trend. I don't think that this is a thing yet, but something to keep our eye on as we kind of move forward. All right, so we will transition into the podium, and that saw kind of who we would have expected given the decanting from testing in the first race. Charles Leclerc in the Ferrari comes home in P3. Sergio Checo Perez doing exactly what he needed to do to maintain that seat, despite picking up a 5-second penalty for an unsafe release, which isn't anything that the driver controls. Always find that penalty kind of odd. And in P1, Max Verstappen doing whatever he wants to do. So big thoughts on the podium.
Not many. I mean, but it's just kind of, I feel like this may be the pattern we find ourselves in where it's Perez maybe qualifies down a couple positions. He takes some time. He works his way back up and through, and then they both kind of scamper off into the distance, with a Ferrari in tow. That feels at least at the beginning of the season is going to be the formula. So yeah, I mean, nothing is surprising other than Verstappen didn't get the fastest lap point. So that's something.
And he didn't lead every lap. That's the other good thing. You know, we actually got to see for a couple laps him actually be in traffic. And it took him, I think, 3 or 4 laps to finally get around Lando. He was on a harder tire that was still kind of not up to temperature. But once that hard tire fired up, woo-wee. Talk about just being able to do whatever he wants to do whenever he wants to do it. Dang, that car just looks like it's just – it's got to be fun to drive that car. regardless of whether you've got Max's talent or not, it's got to be just a fun feeling to know that you can do pretty much whatever you want to do.
I mean, if this Verstappen stuff were to blow up, it would just be fascinating to see another top driver on the grid take over that spot and see what they can do. Because, like, I wonder just how good Verstappen is. Because, like, I mean, granted, Perez was a midfield driver, but he was a very good midfield driver. Like, I just think this is just next level special kind of stuff. So it would be interesting to get a barometer on it. But I think it's just the relationship between him, that team, Newey, maybe not the team principal, but it's just incredible stuff. So,
yeah, we'll kind of give an update on the latest happenings of at least what we think we know about what exactly is going on behind the scenes at Red Bull when we get to our awards, because I have a special place for this entire fiasco. And I think this is where we're kind of going to with that. But yeah, I mean, and again, we talked about Perez earlier, like passing the test. He's just doing what he needs to do. I mean, if you're looking at the barometer of the four potential suitors for that seat, being Liam Lawson, Yuki Tsunoda, Daniel Ricciardo, and Sergio Perez. I mean, Liam Lawson has an incomplete because he's not in anything right now. Perez has put back-to-back 1-2s. So, I mean, how do you argue with that? And this one looked a lot closer. I mean, granted, the 5-second penalty makes it look that he's a little bit closer to Leclerc than he really was. But beyond that, this was really good. You know, he's not 20 seconds down on his teammate this time, so at least there's that. Yep. We will continue to look for things.
That's the positives where they come.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I would walk away from this race thinking, okay, at least the midfield battle was good. There was actual tire variability between that. You had your safety car, which probably killed a lot of any of the real strategy debates because everybody went on the hard tire, and the hard tire was just too good here. I would recommend even going down a step in the tires to try to make this a little more entertaining, to have a little bit more pit stops, because everybody said this is an easy one stop. And when you could do 80% of this race on one compound of tire, you've brought the wrong tire compounds. That's what that tells me.
It should not be no question for all of these teams to switch on lap 7.
Right. Exactly. Yes. Exactly. And even then, like the medium tire, what was it? Lap 38 out of 50. Yeah. So they only put like 12 laps on the soft tire. So, I mean, it was just kind of incredible. I mean, that track is ridiculously smooth and very high grip. And it has to be. I understand that. But yeah, I just wish that, you know, we could sprinkle in some strategery here to try to see, you know, get some mixing up of the order a little bit. But anyway, I guess that's my rant for another time. All right, so we will leave the review here. We will take a quick break. We'll re-rack. We'll come back. We'll recap where the drivers are in the top 10. There is some shuffling there. And we'll recap where the teams all shake out. Then we'll get into the listener reaction, the fan email segment. We've got good stuff from our regular people. So come on back. We'll get into that. We'll hand out some awards. And I don't know that I want to talk about predictions, but I will.
God.
Cody's not here. But we'll talk about predictions. Cody's going to be a very happy person for not even being on the recording tonight. Anyway, we'll get into all that in just a little bit. So come on back.
You are listening to the Outlap F1 podcast, and we'll be right back after this quick pit stop. Grab your flu powder, broomstick, or apparate to your favorite audio streaming service to join the discussion on Hogwarts, a podcast. where Dan and his friends have in-depth chapter-by-chapter breakdowns of each Harry Potter novel. Join the group as they dive into the magical world and discuss plot points, analyze character development, and occasionally go off the rails. Whether you're a muggle who's new to the series or a pure-blood wizard who won't need a remember-all, Hogwarts, a podcast, brings everyone to the Great Hall for a magical discussion. Hogwarts, a podcast, available wherever you get your podcasts. All right, welcome back. This is season 6. This is episode number 6 of the Outlap F1 podcast. It's our 2024 Saudi Arabian GP race review. You've got Andy, and I'm joined with Deanna tonight. We just wrapped up our initial review of the race itself and the weekend. And so we're now going to kind of tell you where all the standings shake out after round 2 of 24. So we got 22 more opportunities for Max maybe not to win. And we'll see how many of those actually come to fruition. But D, if you recap the top 10 drivers, I will take the team standings.
All right. So in first place for something like the 50th race in a row, it is Max Verstappen on 51 points. And I'm sure for probably the last time, in second place is Sergio Perez, less than a race behind, at least, or a race behind. In third place is Charles Leclerc, the first of the Ferrari drivers, on 28. In fourth is George Russell with 18. In fifth is Oscar Piastri with 16. In sixth is Carlos Sainz with 15. Seventh is Alonso with 12, just ahead of Norris, also on 12. In ninth is Hamilton on 8. And in 10th, in his debut, and somehow the third driver for a Ferrari in the top 10, is Oliver Bearman with 6.
Yep. And as where the team standings shake out, Red Bull Racing powertrains, Red Bull Racing Honda RBPT. Wow, that's a lot of names, but they are free and clear. They could put as many names as they want to on that car, and I think it's still going to be P1. They have 87 points. P2 is Ferrari. They check in with 49 points. P3, hello, how you doing? There's McLaren Mercedes. They check in with 28. P4 is the Mercedes Works team. They check in with 26. P5 is Aston Martin. They come in with 13. P6, that point is big for Haas. We mentioned it. They check in. They jump up to P6 in the constructors. They have the one solitary point. P7, 8, 9, and 10 are all on 0 points. That is Williams, Kicksauber, Red Bull, Honda, or the V-Carb team, and Alpine at the back. It doesn't look like that's going to get any better anytime soon. I think they're done firing people at least this week. So that's positive. all right. So enough of our takes on what we saw this weekend. We want to open it up to the fan email segment. It's usually my favorite part of the show. D, it's been a long time since you've done one of these. So it's your time to shine.
Yes.
Rachel Fleming has promised to be more positive moving forward after she, I think we were all a little depressed, Rachel. Don't feel bad. We were all kind of bummed out by the bummer of a Bahrain. What does Rachel have to say?
Yeah. So Rachel says, firstly, I want to say sorry about how negative I was in the last podcast. That's what happens when I have to watch a dreadful race. I get it. Going to try to be positive for this one since it was a much better race. First, Ollie Bearman, another young driver thrown into the fire and did an amazing job. I wouldn't be surprised to see him on the grid next season. What great teamwork from Haas as well. K-Mag getting 20 seconds of penalties wasn't great, but Haas saw an opportunity for Nico and took it. Plus, the racing from 12th to 16th was brilliant. Sadly, we'll have to finish with the negative of Lance Stroll being Lance Stroll, basically, but him bringing out the safety car did lead to a split strategy, so I commend him for that. Still not good enough, though.
Yeah, I mean, first of all, you can be as negative as you want to, Rachel. It's fine. You're entitled. Bahrain was bad. We were all kind of looking at each other. Cody and I were like, well, how are we going to make this entertaining? Let's see. Let's try to figure out how we spin that one. But I definitely thought the product today was a lot better. So I'm encouraged by that. Australia is usually a banger of a race, or at least a banger of a track. So I'm always interested for that. Then we go from there to Japan. I think there's a lot of good things coming. I'm actually interested to see what a ground effect car does around China with that long straight and that very interesting turn one.
It's been a while.
Yes, it has been a while since we've been there. So that may finally throw some variability into a lot of this. In terms of your Haas comment, yeah, Haas, the one thing I'm noticing with Io running the team as opposed to Gunther, they're all about team strategy.
they even were trying to do some of the toe, which I didn't think was even going to be possible on a track like this, to set up Nico to maybe possibly make Q3. Unfortunately, it led to his engine conking out. I don't think one had anything to do with the other. But unfortunately, you know, we never got to see if that actually was a proper thing because, you know, had Haas been able to pull that off, maybe that inspires somebody else. Maybe that inspires an Aston Martin to do it for Alonso or a McLaren to do it for Norris or Piastri, depending on who was farther up there. So we never got a chance to see if that would have worked, but yeah, good teamwork all day on the Haases, and they get that well-earned point because of it.
Yeah, I think they're being crafty and creative, which is what you have to do when you're all scrapping for that one random point that doesn't come very often. So, hopefully that kind of starts to spread throughout the rest of the teams back there and we just start seeing some fun new things. Would be nice. Okay. So next up, the formula says, wow, Ollie Bearman, what an incredible story. I won't lie, me as a 20-year-old in a Ferrari debut would have struggled in his circumstances, which is not to imply that there's any circumstance in which I concede in F1. Sam, I know the race itself wasn't super, but the circuit is an absolute showcase of the capabilities of an F1 car, the true temple of speed surpassing Monza, in my opinion.
Yeah, I mean, in terms of what this track does definitely ask a lot of an F1 car, and you definitely get to see the weight shifting back and forth. It is that roller coaster ride where you could definitely tell, you know, what cars are set up where. It's also interesting that you were seeing certain cars be a lot more dominant in certain places, like the Mercedes. Like, we didn't even really talk about it in the review, but the Piastri-Hamilton, which was on there for a good chunk where Piastri just couldn't get past, is a perfect example of that type of situation where the McLaren car is dominant in certain parts of the track and the Mercedes car is so much better in other parts of the track. And you basically end up with two guys running two completely different setups with two very different cars, almost with the same exact lap time. Lap after lap after lap after lap, DRS notwithstanding. But, I mean, it was just kind of amazing to kind of see that. And you also kind of see it when, like, we go from a fully wet track to a dry track. You see, like, certain teams, like, the downforce will be, like, their ideal for those couple laps, and then it'll get a little drier, and then it'll shift back to kind of what we're always used to seeing. So, yeah, I mean, I do like the fact that this track did that. You know, we talked about Oliver Bearman. I mean, it's an incredible thing. It's definitely the story of the weekend. It's a nice feel-good story for a sport that needs a feel-good story right now. Good on you, Ollie Bearman. And I think that he's going to – I hope he goes back to F2, and that inspires him to do some amazing things there. I think based on what I've already seen in his free practice form, and now especially a form here, yeah, I think a Haas seat is definitely in the cards for that guy coming into next year, because next year is going to be a big year of change.
Yep. And I will say for this track, I think it is the track itself, but the way that they set the cameras up for this track is somebody did an incredible job. Like, it is the most, like, you can kind of feel the peril when you're watching the cars go through there. Like, whoever did that, and, like, even just, and I mean, well, this is probably more about the track itself, but, like, watching Lando, like, you could see him physically pulling away from Lewis in that first sector. They had the gyro cams going, and you forget that there's banking in that track. It's minimal, but, like, it was just so cool. Anyway, so I think the way that they filmed that track this weekend was exceptional.
Yeah, the visuals of it are amazing.
Yeah.
You know, I've always said, like, I would love to, like, try to go there if you could just pick it up and drop it on, like, the California coastline. I'm totally in if that's where this track was located, because the visual, the aesthetics, and I will give full credit. The light show was cool. The fireworks were cool. Even the drone thing is kind of cool. It's just kind of interesting. I didn't see the backlash against that same stuff when, you know, Las Vegas kind of did the same thing. Interesting. The lack of reaction to all that, but okay, I guess I'll just back away. All right. And we had one more I didn't get a chance to put him in the document, but our buddy Dave Doherty chimed in. He was all on Ollie Bearman as well. He said, Bearman was exciting to watch. That kid is a true racer. Could not agree with you more, Dave, on that. All right, so we will now move into our awards, and we'll start, as we are apt to do, with the rubbish. So, Dee, I'll let you go first. What goes into the garbage bin this week?
Appendixes is what I'm going to go with. Unless you're Ollie Berman or Nick DeVries, they're not great. It's unfortunate. I mean, we got a fantastic story out of it, but it does hurt Carlos a bit in the end here, as he's trying to audition himself for these other people and also be like, Ferrari, like, this is what you're missing out on, kind of thing. So I'm a little bit upset for him that he missed out on that and had to go through that, look miserable. But yeah, that's my rubbish for this weekend.
Mine is the continued whatever the hell at this point is going on behind the doors at Red Bull. It's such a heavy story. It's such a not fun story to follow. The whole thing can kind of get thrown up, wrapped up, and thrown into the bin as far as I'm concerned. And you seriously cannot make some of this up. I think some of the latest reporting is now that Helmut Marko may get himself suspended. He's under investigation. We know that to be real. We don't know necessarily what it's for. For alleged, at least this is what story that came out, talking to the media. And he was told by Ali Mitzlaff, don't go talk to the media. And then he went and talked to the media. Very confusing. Don't know what's going on. Max and Jos Verstappen are apparently very, very loyal to Helmut Marko. And if Helmut Marko goes, there's a really actual possibility that Max Verstappen can walk away from the incredible dominance of the RB20 and take his show somewhere else. Into potentially the waiting arms of Toto Wolff, who may just happen to have an open seat uncommitted for next season. I've said it before on this thing. We are far from done. We are far from done. We're going to see what the next 2 weeks bring. I imagine it's going to be crazy. That's about all I can say. But as far as trying to follow this story and try to see what's real and what's not, and try to keep everybody correctly informed, it's exhausting, to be honest, and I've done it. Yeah,
the rumor mills are turning.
Yep. Okay, enough of what's in the rubbish bin. We'll move to analysis paralysis. I'll go first with this one. I could buy what McLaren and Mercedes did because doing a stack pit stop is a tough thing to ask your crew, but I didn't like the call at the time. I was almost, when I saw Lando stay out, I'm like, he stayed out. And everybody else pitted. That's not going to go well. Was kind of my honest reaction at the time. And we talked about it when we were talking about it in the review. I think it probably maybe cost them maybe 2 spots. So it's not the end of the world. They both, I think, did the best that they could with what they had, given that situation. But man, if I'm going for it, I'd say do the double stack there.
Yeah. And I mean, that's mine too. Because I mean, there's really no other strategy choice to be made. But again, as I said earlier, like, I think it was worth the risk. It didn't really work out for them in the end, but it also wasn't fully detrimental. So it's just about the only option this week.
Yeah. I mean, the only thing that I think everybody, including the broadcasters, were surprised that when they both Lewis and Lando ended up on the soft tire, that they weren't able to close the gaps as much.
Yeah.
It could have been that they were both on used sets, so they had already done a heat cycle. That could have something to do with it. And two, I think listening to Lando's radio, he wanted to come in ideally with about 8 laps to go. Lewis forces the issue by coming in with about 12 laps to go, and McLaren had to cover that off. Otherwise, Lando loses out to Lewis there. So I don't think, you know, it was interesting. I didn't get a chance to hear the Mercedes radio on it. It was interesting to think maybe they both thought they were going to get better life of the hard or the soft tire than they both ended up doing. So,
yeah,
it was what I mean, it was.
And granted, it was on the hards, but like watching like Max after the safety car, like it just seemed like it took a while for those tires to get up to temps. But
well,
I don't know.
Maybe I mean, that had something. I think they even made the point that said Oscar Piastri did all but one lap on the set of hard tires last year at that race.
Yeah.
So it's definitely a very – which again, that all tells me you've got the wrong set of tires here. You should either make your qualifying tire a C5 and just do that, or you should bring everything down a step and let's see what happens there. Because then, like I said, I think you could have some more variability. I hope they actually think about that moving forward, you know, given the niceness that this crack was to its tires. But we'll see. We'll see what the powers that be end up doing. All right, we'll move into the dark horse. We may have some consensus here. Dee, I'll let you go first. What you got?
I have Nico Hulkenberg. And, yep, so I'm assuming probably the same thing there. I, again, was expecting this season to be completely dismal from them. And they've shown up in qualifying. I mean, had Hulk actually gotten a lap in, I imagine he could have at least been kind of brushing with Q3, potentially. So, yeah, and to see them kind of bringing the race pace up to that level is exciting to see. And just good for that team that has been kind of missing around in the back there for a few years now. So it's good. It's positive. I think with the leadership changes that they've had, it's just a nice step for them and a good team win.
Yeah, I completely agree. And I have the same one. I've got Nico Hulkenberg and Haas for a very hard earned point. And I share a lot of your same points on that. You know, they went to the test and they said, we're not about performance. We're about figuring out why the tires are chewing up so bad. And they went to the perfect track to kind of figure that out, a track that does chew through tires like a son of a gun. And that's what they did. They just kind of kept churning laps. They were one of the most reliable teams during those 3 days. And they think they got to the bottom of it. Now, this is really the first time. Now, we've already seen that, yeah, under Hulkenberg especially, it looks like Haas can do some one-lap wonders. And they've been able to kind of keep that, which is good. Now, if they've got some race pace and some way to kind of keep up with everybody else there, yeah, I mean, there could be an easy hole between, you know, 7 through 10 and 1 to 5. So there's that P6 position is right there for the taking. And if they can come into that, that is a great step forward for a team that's just been getting pounded. You know, all I heard during the entirety of the Andretti saga is, well, why is Haas even here? Well, maybe they're here to actually try to do some stuff. And as much as I love Gunther Steiner for what he brings to the equation, this may be the best thing for that team, given that team dynamic, that this felt like classic Haas. This felt like what they would try to do when they first came in, is they would try to push the envelope on strategy, take advantage of things when opportunities presented themselves. And look what happened. This is kind of, it is very much classic Haas. Good for them. All right, we will move into our driver of the day, a.k.a. the Max Verstappen Memorial Award. However, we're probably not going to give it to him today, even though he's probably very deserving of it. But I'll go first on this one. Oliver Bearman. Kid gets my congratulatory clap for just, I mean, you have like fantasies of like the manager pointing to the stands and say, you come in here and help us out. But it never happens. This happened and he did it. And he didn't look overly nervous. He didn't look scared. The moment wasn't too big for him. We may be seeing the start of something really, really good. And if this was the start of his career, I hope it leads to really good things for this kid down the line.
Yep, I fully agree. I mean, it can't go to Max Verstappen this week. He didn't get fastest lap, so sorry. And it's Oliver Bearman. But yeah, just incredible story, incredible performance. And again, to have such little time in that car and to do what he did on this track especially was just incredible. So
yeah.
Oliver Bearman
was a feel-good story. Go get him an F2 is what I got to say now.
Yes.
You got some work to do there, bud, but we'll be pulling for you for sure. All right. I've put this off long enough. We do have to talk about predictions. Cody basically took out a whip and strangled me with it basically the entirety of the weekend on these predictions.
You were optimistic.
I know. I was way too optimistic. Trying to dance to the beat of a different drummer when I should have just gone chalk. Wow. So Cody gets 7 points, which is an amazing total just in and of itself. He got the pole sitter. He got the qualifying fastest time. He sweeps the podium, P1, P2, and P3. He got the race fastest time, and he got the prop bet because Nico Hulkenberg scored that point. So the one chalk thing I bet burned me. All I got was the pole sitter. Congratulations. There's my 1 point on the weekend. The good news is it only counts for one. You can only win the weekend with 1 point. That's the only good news that I have. So unless we get into tiebreakers, at which point then I'm way behind. But I will try again next time. I congratulate my cohort on a job well done in the predictions. You did a great job. All right. So I guess that pretty much does it for our rundown. Dee, thanks a lot for coming on tonight.
Yeah.
Appreciate it as always. We will have a week off, and then we head to the land down under, the Australian Grand Prix. It's always a fan favorite. Dee, big thoughts as we head, as the circus moves out of the Mideast and into Australia.
No, I mean, I'm excited for it. I think, was it last year? What was the giant chaotic one with three red flags?
Yep.
So maybe we'll get at least something interesting going on down there. So it's always fun. It's a good place to be. So yeah, looking forward to it.
And it's generally a work schedule friendly Grand Prix.
Yes.
It'll be maybe a Saturday night, Sunday morning type deal where I'll just have to stay up late. But we'll do our best to follow whatever happens during the off time. We know that there will be probably some Red Bull stuff that will come to light. We'll do our best to bring it when we know it. And knowing is half the battle in this type of story. So we will try to follow that. Stay tuned to our social media. We'll get some stuff out over the course of the next couple of weeks. And we'll get the episode dropped as soon as we can. So, yeah, for Deanna, for Cody, who couldn't be here tonight, have fun at the concert, bud. Or have fun at the concerts. It's plural. I'll have to tell the story about how he scores free tickets to all sorts of stuff, and I want to get that secret. His fiance has a talent that we're not necessarily aware of yet. But anyway, we'll leave that there for now. So, yeah, for everybody connected to the show, it's always fun to do. And as always, may all your laps be fast.
Thank you for listening to today's episode of the Outlap F1 Podcast. If you like what you heard, click that subscribe button and be sure to leave us a 5-star review. If you want to connect with us outside of the show, check out our website at www.outlapf1.com. Find us on Twitter and Instagram at @OutlapF1Podcast or email us at chatnow@outlapf1.com. As always, thank you so much for your support, and we'll see you on the next one.